Welcome to Relative Paths, we're a podcast about web development, web design, and things like that. I'm Mark, and that guy over there is Ben.
Hello.
And we are trying out some new equipment.
Yes.
So we've got pop shields and like microphones on the stand and a mixer, and we've got like a you know, other things. So we've got a generator.
Nope.
We've reanimated Nikola Tesla. So he's here doing stuff. We haven't done that. But anyway, so we're back. We have been a little bit irregular of late with our recordings and stuff because we've been super busy.
Yeah, why is that? I've been anniversary holidaying and yurting in tents. Hang on a minute. Tenting in yurts. Yes.
Is that tenting in yurts? I think you just yurt in a yurt.
I think we've been yurting in yurts. Yes. Everybody yurts, I was told a few times when we were on holiday.
How many times did people do that?
Yeah, a few people on Instagram were like, everybody yurts. Oh dear.
Well, yeah, they do. But I haven't actually yurted, so that's a lie. So not everybody yurts.
Okay.
And I've been super busy as well. And plus, this is a re-recording because we did this episode a few weeks ago, but the sound quality was a bit pants, so we're doing it again.
Awful.
So we're going to be robotically reading from a script, no, we're not.
Well, I can't actually remember really exactly what we... Well, actually, I can't remember what we talked about.
Me neither.
I know the basic... what's the word? Topic.
Yeah.
So this will probably be completely different.
Well...
But they won't know. This is completely...
We could release
surplus
it.
To what's it?
Because
people don't know.
Surplus to what's it?
Yeah.
I want what's it now. Anyway, so we're talking about customer education. And this was inspired by, I did a site for Ken at Longshot Photo recently. And using good development practices, I sort of had a test site, so my local build, my test server, and then the live one. And after it went live, I got an email from Ken sort of saying, I've been putting content up on the site, but it's not appearing.
Mm.
And what he was doing is he was using the CMS to put content into the development site,
yeah,
expecting it to appear in the live site. And I think to me and to most web development types, that would be quite obvious. But to him, and Ken's, you know, a reasonably intelligent guy, despite what people say. And it wasn't obvious to him. So it just got me to thinking about customer education and how much we should do. You know,
yeah,
we need to make sure perhaps that we don't just wash our hands of a project and maybe not. Well, what normally comes to your mind actually when you hear the phrase customer education in terms of web development?
I think it could be twofold. So initially you think of education of how to use the site or how to keep the site maintained or updated if it's their responsibility to do so after the site has gone live. But education can start right at the beginning. Education can be something you do almost subconsciously, but you'll be doing it as soon as they come to ask you if you can build something, and you're probably going to have to be making suggestions and explaining what you mean by those suggestions right at the beginning. So it can be, you can start before, you know, at the initial phone call, and then months and years after the site has gone live.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Because often when I hear the phrase, it kind of almost seems like we can try to make the customer think as we do about how what a website should be and what it should do, which is valid, mm, I guess, because, you know, people in the industry, you know, should hopefully know what they're talking about and know how to make a website work. But I think there's a danger of almost becoming like internet thought police,
yeah,
to have to make the customer see things exactly the way that we do. That I was listening to a podcast of a particularly kind of firebrand developer who, if a customer disagrees with a decision he makes, he just stops the project.
Whoa.
And that's his kind of, and he's not like, he doesn't do it as brinkmanship. He's like, okay, that's it then. We can't work together anymore. And the customer can be a bit like, oh, but, and he's like, no, we're done. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
He seems to be successful.
He must have enough work. Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, quite. But that just sort of seems a little bit over the top. And I think sometimes maybe we have to respect the fact that the customer knows their own industry.
Yeah, definitely.
Because quite often we'll be dealing with industries that we don't have much knowledge of.
So customer education might be customers educating us.
You are blowing my mind, man. You're turning this paradigm on its head. But anyways, but back to sort of leading the customer, Do you think it's easy? How easy do you find it to explain something that you know really well and to explain it as you would a child to somebody that doesn't know at all?
I think very quickly you need to work out how much they understand about the specifics as well as just the general, the idea of the internet. And you need to work that out first, because if they have no understanding whatsoever, you need to be explaining almost every term. So when you send them a quote, you need to be explaining why you've quoted what you've quoted.
So have you, not to name names, but who or what has been the, who's been like the least internet or least tech savvy person that you've come across? I mean, how far back have you had to take it?
I've had to take it to the level of explaining really what a domain name is, why they need a domain name, which is actually, you know, it's quite a valid thing. Why you can't just have a number, or why they can't just have their address at AOL.com or something. site.aol.com, you know.
Why the website can't just live in the attic. They can coax it down whenever they need it.
Yeah, so explaining some of that kind of structure. And the mistakes I make, I don't expect people to understand things like, for example, I quoted something yesterday. And what day are we? No, Friday. It was Sunday yesterday. I quoted something Friday, and I said that I wanted, what it was is I want to build this site that will be the first site I've built using Jekyll. I don't want it to have a CMS as such. It's a very simple site, and I want to try it out, see how well Jekyll works. But when I wrote on the quote, I said a non-content managed system, so that if you want to do updates, you'll come to me, but I envisage that you'll want to do updates once a year, so it'll actually work out more cost effective than me building you a content managed system that will need maintenance and updating. This will not need as much, if any. I mean, I know we could get into an argument, a discussion over that. You know, do you have to update Jekyll sites?
Tune in for next week's exciting episode on.
Which, of course, there will be components used that you will want to update at some point. But
I know very little about Jekyll, actually, so we could make that subject of a future episode, maybe.
Well, so do I at the moment. Next week, I'll know a lot about it, because it'll be built and finished, and this site will be live if everything goes right.
Oh, it will. It will.
Yeah, it'll be all right. So in that case, I thought if I just say I'm not going to use... I propose that we don't use a CMS, but I build it with Jekyll, they would, of course, say, what? Because they're not going to know, well, this particular person isn't going to know what Jekyll is. They're just going to think it's something to do with Jekyll and Hyde. You do need to explain things like that to most people. But most people have an understanding, I do find that most people have an understanding of how emails work. And when they come to you, they know they need a domain name, and they know they'll be able to have, say, email addresses at that domain name and that kind of thing. But some don't. They really don't understand how the whole system works.
Do you find sometimes it can be... almost at the other end, where you have a customer or client who thinks they know a lot and kind of almost ends up kind of getting tripped up because they think that they understand things better than they actually do, and you have to actually say to them, well, actually that's wrong, or you know, you have to
I have had clients that it's a bit of a battle at first, and you have to gain their trust. I think I've changed in the way I deal with them. Is I used to be a bit sort of snippy with it and think, well, I'm the professional here, and I know you might have read a few articles in .NET magazine, but now I feel actually, no, they do know, and they want to know where they're wrong, or they want to know, but they feel like you're not going to pull the wool over their eyes, and they're going to get maybe a better cost, or they're going to get a more accurate costing or quote. So they sometimes will show you quite early on that they do know what they're talking about, and often they do, and that can be a blessing and a curse.
In what way? In what way can it be a curse then, do you think?
It can be a curse in that sometimes with quoting, we might know that I can't put down... I might want to charge 2 days worth of work to build a website, and I know that a day of that is me learning to use, for example, Jekyll. I wouldn't put on a quote, learning to use Jekyll one day, building your site in Jekyll one day. Because they're going to say, why am I paying for your learning? Mm. All we do is, like with any business, you know, you've got an in cost, you've got a printer in, you need to get a printer in to do a job, or you need something. You sort of hide that within a job. And I don't mean it sounds very, I don't mean cynically, it's just what you do. It's just business, isn't it?
Yeah.
You cover your in costs with your out costs. So I cover my training of myself and the time it takes in the job cost. Mm. So however, there may be a client that I quote 2 days and they'll say, it never takes 2 days to build this site in Jekyll. And you'll think, well, no, it doesn't.
So you have people that are actually...
So there are some
much.
People...
Okay.
But normally they would be... I find they would be, say, maybe other agencies.
Okay.
Or other parties that are handing you work. Not normally end users.
Okay.
And that's where it comes back to. We've talked before about honesty. And actually it can come back sometimes to honesty.
Yeah.
It might be better to be a bit honest about it. And that's why I think in that episode, which is probably ages ago now, I can't remember, we were talking about the idea of if someone comes to you and says, can you do this? I find it better to say, yes, I can find out how to do that, but I haven't done it, than saying, sure, because you can get yourself in a whole world of pain that way.
We all do that to a certain extent. We all think that we need to say, actually, yeah, that'll be fine, and then you can go away and figure it out. Because I guess it's more difficult.
Mm.
It's worse to say, yes, I can do it, and then have to go back to someone and say, actually, I realise I can't.
Yeah, actually, I can't. Oh, it's now... Yeah, awful if you have to go back and say, I misjudged this and it's going to cost you a lot more.
And I wonder if you put the customer off with that, with I don't know, but I could find out, I wonder if that's a good way of qualifying a customer, because I wonder if the kind of customer or client who balks at that is going to be somebody who's going to be bad news down the line, maybe. So
yeah, it could be.
Yeah, that could be like a bullet dodged, maybe.
Mm.
But it's interesting though. So, I mean... What you're saying is interesting because it can be educating, like the client, so the person who's actually going to be the website owner, or possibly even somebody that you're dealing with at an agency, or like an intermediary, because I'm sure it's been your experience that people at agencies that you deal with may not necessarily be up with the latest development practices. So maybe you have to talk to them and sort of educate them a little bit.
Yeah. I have to say, just for the sake of honesty, what got me into using preprocessors was someone at an agency who handed me a job and said, now that was a Compass job, and he'd been using CodeKit, and he just said, oh, it's been built with CodeKit, but you'll see the config RB file and things like that. And I had to say, what? So at that point, I didn't know, and I went and got CodeKit. I built that particular, finished that project in CodeKit, and then went another way. But that was a big learning curve for me, and that was someone, an agency that passed the job over to me, and they did know more about that type of development than I did, and I'm thankful that they did.
Yeah.
Because like that then boosted me down the path that most of us are going now, which is massively complex web development.
It's all good fun,
unlike it used to be.
It's all good fun now. Oh, in like the old days.
It is good.
When you could just chisel out a website into a piece of granite. But that's interesting. Oh, by the way, it's not a dragon outside. Somebody is fixing a roof.
Yeah, no, we're not sure how much of this is going to be picked up because these dynamic mics aren't quite as worryingly... they don't pick up as much
because we had a Yeti mic before, which
is a condenser.
Everything. So we don't know. So you might not be able to hear.
But they're putting felting down and then using some big torch to seal it, I think.
Yeah.
So what do I know about roofs?
it sounds manly and kind of heroic and stuff. So
hey, Pete, tweet in and tell us what they're doing. He's got a big blowtorch and some black tape and some felt, and he's been trying to burn char grill this felt for about 2 weeks.
That sounds like sort of an elaborate assassination. Yeah. Sort of. There's some black tape and a blowtorch to kill Captain Asbestos. No, wait, a blowtorch would be the wrong thing for Captain Asbestos.
It would.
Probably be like some face masks and some bags appropriately labelled or something. Anyway, so back to education. Back to the thing I mentioned a while ago about meeting some resistance from the customer. So if you ever had instances where you're trying to convince somebody of something and they've pushed back, I mean, how do you handle that sort of situation?
Yes. So resistance to using things like using a CMS when they don't think they need one, or not wanting to I'm trying to think of the examples.
Well, I had one in the... It didn't take off in the end, but that was what I was going to do for an e-commerce site. It's probably a good thing I didn't do it because it was the second site ever that I was going to build. I remember talking to you about it and I think you were like, okay, well, good luck with that.
Yeah. Was that when you said to me about the forms? I'm just going to build a form.
No, that was after.
Oh, okay.
That was after. I didn't learn. Yeah. But he wanted his front page to be, because it was a shop, so he was thinking quite literally, he wanted it to be an actual shop. So when somebody went onto the page, there
it
was
looked
a door
like a shop
and windows with you know, products in the windows. And he's like, could we do that? And like, you know, and from his standpoint of somebody that had no, didn't know web development and wasn't sort of, you know, necessarily the most web savvy person in the world, which isn't a crime. Sometimes we can be like people in music shops.
Oh, yeah.
Like back in the old days when you used to kind of go into, you know, you had to go into a shop and ask somebody for something and they'd look at you a bit like, you like that, you don't know anything about music.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to be crabby about things. But anyway, I managed to sort of steer him away from that because I think he thought that was quite a good idea. But you've got to be quite, I know people sometimes don't, you're like using the word empathetic, but, you know, that's exactly what it is. You have to understand where your client's coming from and steer them away. But so that was, it was interesting that one of my early experiences in getting into this kind of industry was steering somebody away from what I thought was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've had instances of doing that. But again, back to resistance. How do you deal with it when somebody is convinced that this is a really good idea for their site, or that, like you said, a CMS is a bad idea for their site? How do you deal with that sort of situation?
I think it depends how. If you think the idea is absolutely crazy, and it will not meet the needs of the final site, the brief that they've given you for what they want their site to do at the end, if what they're then suggesting is going to hamper that, then I think you need to be really quite strong about it. That'll be down to the kind of relationship you've already built with them. If they already trust you to make decisions, they may have no basis for that trust because it might be a brand new client and it's a type of site or a project that you've not worked on before, that type, so you've got nothing to show them in the past. So I think you need to... the last thing to do is probably just put your foot down. The best thing to do is to try and explain, because most people aren't like children. You know, they're thinking, intelligent, reasonable people.
Really?
And so, yeah, I think most part they want to be explained to. Especially, I find it much easier dealing with someone who works in an office who's been asked to get a website done than I find with working with a company owner. The worst type generally is company owner, self-made man. Who doesn't get what I want. Yeah, who doesn't want web developers telling them, well, that might not work for you. The other thing is they might be right. And it might be that they do know their business and that they might have an idea of doing something. They might want to do it a bit differently than everyone else in the industry, if there is an industry, does. So I think you need to be quite humble there and accept. An example of that is not to do with web development, but how I felt so small years ago. I'm wondering if I've told this story before, but I don't think I have. But you'll have to tell me if I have.
I don't think I have, actually. Actually, we could have that as a teaser for part two.
Oh, right.
So we'll get into sort of some of the more... I know we've sort of talked about it a bit, but we'll get into some of the more practical sort of aspects of this in part two after we've had a tool start.
Okay, so for this week's tool start, you have something for us, don't you, to talk about?
I do have something for us to talk about. So it's lynda.com, which is, if you listen to any other web development website, no doubt that they've mentioned it. I think we've mentioned it in the past episode as well.
Yeah.
For teaching ourselves. And it's been really useful for that. But it does have a number of courses which would be relevant to end users as well. For instance, if you just do I've just done a quick search, and there's a tutorial for website management for musicians and bands, which is quite interesting. So that's actually an area I'd like to get into. I've always thought it'd be interesting to do a website for a band. But there's a tutorial for them. There's also another tutorial I just found, Twitter for Business. So it's about how business can use Twitter to promote their own website, promote their own brand. So there's quite a lot of resources on there for end users. So if you have the kind of client who seems like they you know, they're really engaged and they really want to learn, then there are things like that that they can turn to. And I'm sure, like, again, if you have the right kind of client,
right,
that they won't mind spending a bit of money. Because I think
it's subscription based,
so it's on subscription. I should have it right here, but I don't. Oh yeah, here we go. So you can have, there's a number of different tiers. You can have a basic one for $19, which gives you access to all the videos and the courses. And I think that, oh, that's annual billing. So you have to pay, right. I'm not sure if you have to pay one lump sum, but I think you do.
Okay.
Actually. Or you can have a month-to-month one, which is the one that I used to have, which is $24. Oh, no, I had the next one up. But it's $24 and you get access to all the videos. But then you can go to one of the premium options where there are downloadable resources as well. So quite often with courses, there are files that you can download. So you can sort of work at home.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. I've just been using Laracasts, which is a site, and a load of tutorials put together by a guy called Jeffrey Way,
who
knows all about Laravel.
Yeah.
And really good. I kind of almost, I thought I'm going to have to actually need some help with learning, getting back into Laravel. I only used it for a short period anyway, and only built half a project with it, or less than half, and handed it over to someone else. So I really needed to learn it quite quickly. And I'd heard people raving about these particular videos, and they are really good. And with those, I noticed it is monthly. I think you can buy it yearly as well for a reduced cost. And I noticed there you can download them, because when I went away to these yurts, I downloaded a whole, I think it was 12 videos to watch while I was away, which I didn't get any time to watch anyway, but that's another story. And I was surprised that it lets you download them. So I was thinking, well, if I'm paying my $8 a month or whatever it is, it's not loads, and then I can just download these, what would stop me going and downloading, you know, a couple of hundred videos and then only paying for a month's worth? But, you know, I wouldn't do that because
you're a good person.
Yeah, yeah. But it just made me wonder. I think it seemed quite good to me, actually, that I stuck them all on a SD card.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if you can, I think you can download the courses for Lynda onto mobile devices and things like that. And you can download the project files. I don't think you can actually download the videos. But there are a number of sites where you can do that. Like on CSS Tricks, there's like the Lodge section.
Okay.
And Chris Coy's got a few video courses on there. I haven't checked it for a while, but way back when I did one of those. And it's the same thing. You could download the videos. I think I've still got a few videos downloaded that I haven't watched. But yeah, so that's a resource which is available to your customers. That's lynda.com.
That's good.
But we'll talk a bit more about this in part two.
Okay.
So back to part two. We're going to hear Ben's enthralling and interesting and witty and engaging story that'll make you laugh.
This
it'll make
such
you cry.
A boring it'll story. Change I wish your I hadn't life. Started it.
But we're going to talk a bit about, as we mentioned in the tool start, we're going to talk a bit about how customers can educate themselves. But we'll get onto that in a minute after your story. And go.
All it was is working as a network admin. A company moved. Yeah, boring. A company moved over to hire some office space off us of the building I was working in from South Africa. And we had a telephone system that plugged into all the devices plugged into network sockets, like RJ45 sockets. 8-pin, is it? Yeah, I think so, in the wall. And one of the guys that worked there, the owner of the company, wanted to dial out he wanted to use a dial-up connection from his laptop. So he had a little, they're called RJ11. This is, see, it's boring. Little plugs. And he plugged it directly into the RJ45 socket, completely the wrong size. I kind of ridiculed him, but in my as ridiculely as I could get, and told him it wouldn't possibly work. No, I was just like, what is he doing? What an idiot. You know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. God, dear, these people. And it worked perfectly, and he was able to get a line. And as he showed me that it worked, after I told him it would, under no circumstances, it would definitely wouldn't work, because he was trying to dial up a normal phone. He was trying to make a phone call over a network socket. The technicalities of why it did work is another matter.
Could you talk about it in the most detailed that you possibly could?
But there were several phone line PSTN style cards in the phone system, and that the ports he was using were livened up for those, so they could be used with a normal phone. And it just happened these little RJ11s are actually have the same tab size. They will fit in an RJ45 network socket. That's what it is. You know, normal network cables, they're RJ45s type sockets. It fitted in and it worked. And he, I just remember him just saying to me, you are very confident for such a young man.
Wow.
And it absolutely cut. And I remember that every time I'm about to talk to someone either older than me or in a different industry or younger or anything, where I'm about to tell them, no, this is how you do it, I think of him and how small I felt and how wrong I was.
Wow.
It was a really good lesson because I felt so small. I couldn't look at him for a few weeks. I felt, and when he would phone up to ask for help, I would be ever so, okay, yeah, I'll be right down. And I was just so, what's the word? I don't know.
So humbled?
Yes, humbled. Yeah, that's not the word I was thinking of. But yeah, horrible feeling.
It is
when
a
you
realise
you're
feeling.
An idiot, basically.
It is a horrible feeling when you do that. I mean, it's good to be confident. It's interesting, isn't it? It's quite difficult, just in general, to have the right blend of being confident and competent and showing a bit of humility as well. I think it's interesting because we were talking about learning ourselves. I think if you're the kind of developer or designer that learns, you realise that there's a lot that you don't know and that your own learning is a continual process.
Yeah.
So hopefully when you approach a client to tell them things, it comes across somehow that you're not kind of, you know, on a pedestal like, you know, decreeing to them how wrong they are, but you're giving it, you know, somebody your opinion to the best of your professional knowledge so far. And hopefully that just kind of puts a slightly different slant on it when you talk to somebody. Because I think a while back, I kind of had almost the zeal of the newly converted when I was talking to people. There was a tweet that Chris Coyer put out, which was like, doesn't work on mobile guy. And it was about how that person is right, but also wrong at the same time. And I found that when I first found that about responsive design, I'd be like, oh, that side doesn't work on mobile, that side doesn't work on mobile, that side doesn't work on mobile. And there's somebody that we know who had a site built for them and was asking me what I thought of it. And I sort of went away and looked at it and I was like, ha-ha, it does not work on mobile. And you sort of think, well, actually, you don't want to be that guy.
You don't know the whole backstory. You don't know when it was developed. You don't know if that was part of the brief at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So the thing, you know, you do have to kind of show a little bit of humility. So on that, how much do we trust that the customer knows what they want? No, how much do you trust that a customer knows their own business?
Yeah, that's really difficult, isn't it? Because they should know what is best. Hopefully they can tell you what they want their business, their website to achieve for their business. And they know hopefully the areas that they're trying to target, increase sales for, provide more information from, and that kind of thing. But then it can come to a simple example is people might come to you asking for a site and they say they do want definitely a scrolling banner at the top that takes up 3/4 of a page full. And you might want to say to them, people that are looking at your particular site, I imagine are just wanting to find your phone number as quick as possible. You're an emergency plumber. So they might not want to see a big scrolling banner of these lovely MagnaClean fitting jobs that you've done. They might just want your 24-hour emergency number and what your charges are on your first page. I don't know, that's an example.
Yeah.
And they might say, yeah, but I've really seen this and I love this site. When I looked at the National Geographic site, it had all these beautiful Amazonian pictures. Amazonian pictures? Amazon. Pictures of the Amazon. Amazonian pictures are completely different.
Are they, Ben? Are they?
scrolling across, and that's how I want my site to look. And that might be a case where you think, that's not going to be good for your site.
Gotcha.
And there may be other, a good example is the site, a wedding photography site that I've done, that they're the homepage, and most of them, a lot of wedding photographers, you look at the amount of copy on their homepages in relation to the amount of images. Some of them are still built in Flash and they're current and they do very well. And it's all about people that are getting married, looking at the pictures and on the first page, seeing beautiful pictures. And if it does badly from an SEO point of view, that's almost tough. You've got to rely on the sub-page content for that. So I struggled with that when I first did a site for someone who stripped it right down. They only wanted, say, three menu items, no sub-menu items showing, and they wanted almost the whole page just to be images. And of course, you'd go from a technical point of view, you'd say, oh, no, you don't want that. But actually, they did. And it does work for them. And everyone else in their industry is also doing the same.
Right.
So that was something, that's somewhere I had to just say, actually, I don't know. Okay, if you say so.
Okay.
And had we made it look like some sort of technical site with loads of information about their costs and what sort of films they use and what they, it just wouldn't have captured the people who are love struck and want to find someone to take their beautiful photos.
Lovely. So how did you make the change? How did you make the decision then you're going to go with what that client suggested? I mean, like what convinced you?
Well, really they had to convince me that that is what everyone else was doing and that that was what they needed. Because I did argue it a bit. I did say this is going to be awful from a SEO point of view. Really difficult. And they kind of were like, well, but I want it to look like that. So that was really, they just told me. But that's one of those things that I feel if you've said what you think the case is going to be, so the fact is it is bad from an SEO point of view. But it does work for them because they're getting a lot of their clients through word of mouth and magazine articles. So someone goes to look at their URL because they've actually typed it in because they've read it in print in a bridal magazine, for example. So they get to the site anyway. And so it is actually what they see in the first few seconds of the page load that means whether they think that this site, this person is the person they want to take their photographs.
It's interesting. So I guess if you've come from developing a site for somebody else, like, I don't know, a solicitor or something like that, who's maybe their site is very copy heavy, you might go to that site with the same mindset.
Yeah, that's exactly what
thinking
happens,
about it. So that's interesting. So I guess, again, part of having a good approach to customer education is allowing it to be a bit of a back and forth, I guess.
I did one for a window cleaner recently who said they didn't want any search engine traffic. They had more than enough work, but they needed to be able to show people a site when people asked for it, and they needed to have something put on the side of a van, and they didn't want any additional kind of promotional work done from an SEO point of view. They have very little detail in terms of copy heavy detail, like the locations that they work in. It's a very simple site, but they do just need to show who they're insured by and the areas that they work in and that they've been established for however many years it is, and that they've got this working at height, you know, those kind of public what's it insurance and working at height certification and that kind of thing. Just needs to be visible for someone that's about to check them out before they phone them up. So that, yeah, that again, I was like, okay, but just so you know, you know, if you want it to perform well, from a search engine point of view, we'll need to do a bit more work in different areas. But they were no, it's okay.
That is interesting then.
So that's, I guess, fine, isn't it?
So I guess if you make somebody aware of what the outcome is of doing things in a particular way, and if they're happy with that, I guess you have to assume that they know what they're talking about. And even if they don't, you're kind of giving them what they want, because sometimes there are quite a lot of these the client broke my design sites where people have got an idea of how a website should be. Maybe it's the right idea from a certain point of view, but the client wants something else. I guess, again, the customer is paying you in the end. And we're not artists. I think sometimes, particularly some designers, can approach a project as if they're the auteur, like as if the thing should be their own project. But it's not. We're providing a service, so maybe we can't be too dogmatic about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to customer education then. So we're talking about some practical approaches. We talked a bit about how we should approach it during the project. What about once the site's live? I mean, do our responsibilities stop there?
No, because especially if you're someone's using a site, if you've built a site that is based on ACMS, they're going to need to know how to use that. And it's useful, maybe if you've built it in something as well-known as WordPress. A lot of people already have experience with that. They've used it. Maybe it's just an early version they've used it, but they get the idea of categorizing posts and placing images in. A lot of the WYSIWYG tools in WordPress are, you know, you paste in images and you paste in, and the formatting is pasted with it, just like Word. So they kind of get used to using it. But they might need some... I do get asked quite often for a manual on how to use the website.
Oh, do you really?
Okay. Yeah. And a long time ago, I stopped writing manuals.
Oh, so you'd actually have a written manual?
Yeah, because people would ask... When I was working back for agency days, we used to sort of do a bit of a branded up manual for people. The problem with that, it gets out of date.
Yeah.
Really quickly, if the thing is based... So we're using WordPress as an example just because it's... everywhere, and it's an easy example to use. But WordPress may change between version 3 and version 4. The way that posts are written has changed visually quite a bit, and the way that images are manipulated, for example. You can do a lot more now in one version jump. I mean, I know it's loads of subversion, minor versions, but over the course of, say, a year and a half, maybe, or 2 years of development, WordPress has changed quite a bit. So if you've written a manual for someone 2 years ago, you might have to sort of spruce it up and change it and do a load of new screen dumps and things. In that case, I try and point people to the WordPress documentation or to one of the training resources. Now, did we talk about...
We talked about WP Beginners,
yeah.
I think, a way back. I'm not sure... I don't think I've used it.
No,
it's not an anger, but it's one that you keep... That pops up,
yeah.
Keep hearing off. So I guess it just illustrates the fact that there are a lot of resources around for people who are starting out with WordPress. And actually, back to Linda, there's a course on there about how to use a website, a WordPress site from an end user's point of view. So it's just about how to write posts, how to do kind of a lot of things that wouldn't necessarily be obvious to somebody.
Yeah. How did you handle it then with Perch, with Longshot Photo? Did you teach Ken to use it? Did
it's
he
really
teach
simple.
Himself?
He taught himself. Again, yeah. With Perch, it's very instinctive. You kind of know what to do. I mean, I did, we had like a quick sort of meetup at a coffee shop where he bought me lots of cakes. Thank you, Ken. and...
If you want a site, Ken, you know where I am.
cakes. Anything for cakes. But yeah, so I just ran him through. And he'd been using the development site for a while, but he had it. I was like, this is how you do posts. And he's like, that's fine. And this is how you you can write a post and have it go live at a certain time. But yeah. And he's like, yeah, fine, I've worked that out. And I think the only thing was the excerpt bit. Like with Perch, like with WordPress, you know, when you start type, when you have the copy, you can have it cut off at a certain point and that'll appear on the indexing page as the excerpt. With Perch, you can have a box where somebody can specifically write a little snippet that goes on the front. So you don't have it like truncating in the middle of a sentence, which is like you can see on some people's blogs, it stops. And I hadn't explained that. But with Perch, with each on the sort of the user interface, with each kind of field that they have to enter into, you can write a little note explaining how it works. So
that's useful.
When you have the title, you can have, this is a title, this will appear in the indexing page and at the top of the post,
yes,
and the individual post page. And with the excerpt, and there's a special a picture which goes on the indexing page, and you can be clear and say, this picture only appears on the indexing page. And this excerpt only appears on the indexing page. So again, I guess to a certain degree, like when you're, because you can do that with advanced custom fields, can't you?
Yeah.
So you can write in explanations.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, that's part of it, part of almost providing sort of inline documentation,
yes,
in a site, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, that's useful.
Yeah. So when you build a site, you can build that in. And I guess if you build a site in a way which is user-friendly, like Perch is, so, you know, you don't actually have to do an awful lot of work. But we went to WP Birmingham, WordCamp Birmingham. One of the talks that we listened to was about this, was about customer education. And the speaker, I think it was Brian Duffy, who has a WordPress training sort of platform, he was saying that a lot of people will end up having a WordPress site, or, you know, any site with based on any CMS, and just not know how to use it. So they get given what could be a really powerful site, And then they just have no idea how it works, and they can end up being quite dissatisfied, and it can make people turn to maybe using a different platform altogether.
Yeah.
And it means that, you know, the customer might not want to come back and work with you because you've basically delivered them something that they can't use. So it is really important that once the site's gone live that somebody knows how to use it. And I mean, it's, I mean, do you ever sort of just check in? Do you check in on people after they've used it?
And I've been asked before, after a while, after a few months, I've been asked to go and give some training. And that's fine. I did it not too long ago, April. I went and spent an afternoon with a client who had used, they could sort of use WordPress, but it was quite simple. What they wanted really is they just wanted me to quickly show them a few things, and it helped, it worked. And they then picked it up and they understood. But just initially, and they, what it was almost, it was a case of showing them what they didn't need to worry about.
Okay.
Because for certain reasons, they wanted an administrator's login, and I really should have created a custom user type that gave them what they wanted, a custom role, but didn't actually give them full administrative privileges, because they were wondering whether they needed to worry about themes and plugins and the advanced custom fields setup and all that sort of stuff. And actually, a lot of the time spent, right, now you don't need to worry about that, but you do need to worry about this, isn't this? And it was actually quite simple after a while.
Because with advanced custom fields, you can hide the settings, can't you?
You can. Yeah.
Which is useful.
It is. I should have done that. Actually, I think I may have done that now. But that was all that was. It was just orientation, a bit of an overused phrase of hand-holding. But that's what it was.
But it is, yeah. And I think sort of I think sometimes we can forget that there are probably lots of things that we have to do that we need that. Like I've been doing quite a lot of DIY recently, and sometimes it's nice. Like we had a builder sort of come and do some things for us, and he just talked me through a few things. And, you know, just having somebody, and there were things that I was, that I thought were very complicated. And once he taught me through them, you sort of figure out that they're quite simple.
Yeah.
And then you can be, you know, you get confident, and then that means that, you know, all your shelves fall down because you don't put them up properly, which is what I did. Oh, these are fine. So putting them up was quite easy then.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. We should remember that then. I hate it when I think I'm reasonably technical.
Yeah.
And I hate it when the car goes into the garage and I ask what needed to be done and I'm told, oh, well, we just have to fix some stuff. I want to know. I really do. Not just because I'm checking that they've done what they said they do, but I want to learn about it and I want to know what was wrong.
Mm.
And we must remember that when talking to clients that they don't want us to just say, oh, yeah, well, I sorted it all out for you. Don't worry, my love.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's almost, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, kind it of, is. Yeah. Don't you worry your pretty little head about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It,
which is so infuriating.
Yeah. But then I guess it depends on the kind of customer. Because, I mean, there will be some people that go to the mechanic and just want to know it's fixed.
Yeah, well, that's what we need to, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we just need to know.
We need to gauge it. You need to gauge it. I think responsibility is on us to gauge it when our clients want to know a bit more and ask us, and we should tell them. It's not like some hidden art.
Yeah.
And I like it when I ask a mechanic what he's done, and he tells me. And if I say, okay, but what do you mean? And then he tells me. It doesn't just, oh, well, yeah, you know, I just did some stuff.
Yeah.
So must remember that.
Yeah, well, it's good to draw on your own experience. I mean, I think there are things that frustrate us, and it's not necessarily about how much we want to know specifically. Like if I'm the same, because I'm quite curious, so I like to know how things work. But what I like is if somebody responds to me and sort of, you know, accepts that I'm quite curious. Yeah. Whereas, you know, there might be times when you're not terribly interested in how a thing works and, you know, you just want somebody to sort of like do the job and be on their way.
Yeah. People have said that to me. They've said, no, don't worry about that. That's what I pay you for.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's good. That sets the bar. We know where we are.
Yeah. But you mentioned manuals a little while ago.
Yes.
Sort of writing manuals. Did you factor that into the job price?
No, good point.
Right.
Sometimes as an agency we did, but I've sometimes forgotten how long it takes to explain something to someone after the job's done or as the job goes live. And the back and forth, how do you do this? Yeah, but how do you do this? But how do you do this? It can be 5 or 6 emails back and forward, and it can be some phone conversations. And sometimes it could be long. You know, you could easily spend an hour on the phone to someone talking through something, but you're not charging an hour's worth of time. Or the fact that it broke up that you were in the middle of when they called with this problem. So that's something that should be factored in. So sometimes I do put training as a line item.
Oh, okay.
Right. And say, the one I sent on Friday, I did something I've not done this sort of obviously before, but it's someone I've worked with before and I have built another site for them. And they do need quite a lot of things explaining. And I'm not being, you know, they're not at all into the web as such. They just sort of, unfortunately, I think they feel it's almost unfortunate. They just have to have a couple of websites for different things for their businesses. Yeah. And I put a few line items down saying optional this, optional that, some SEO work optional and some training optional. When we talked about it on the phone, I just said, you know, those things you can, if you need them, if you want them.
And how many, sort of, do you outline a certain amount of hours for that, or you charge by the hours depending on how much they wanted?
I outlined what it would be per hour based on what they needed. Okay. Because then they can almost choose. They can just think, well, yeah, can you pop over for an hour?
And so
or
that's,
two.
Okay.
Right, know. Then they know what they're paying for.
Right, gotcha.
Then it puts what it does is it just puts out there that you're not a resource for them to call whenever they want. Now, actually, it's nice to just be really easy with people and help them out. And I do, but there have been a few people, and there are people that will... What can be really annoying is when you tell someone how to do something or you tell them something and they forget, or actually it's much quicker just to ask you again, and they'll send you a quick text or a quick email or a phone call to say, how do I do that again? I just need to. And after the third or fourth time, you think, well, you really need to be educating yourself, or you need to be remembering yourself, you know, remembering this, writing this down, learning this. So putting a cost on it very quickly stops that.
Mm.
Or it might not. They might actually find it for them. If they're very successful in the work they're doing, or it might be much, or they don't want to have to remember all these things of a technical nature, where that's just not what they're interested in. It actually might be cheaper for them to ask you, and that's fine if they want to pay for it, and they might be quite happy to do that.
And I guess in a way that, in a lot of ways, I think in some aspects of work, charging for a thing makes it easier.
Yeah,
because everybody knows where they are.
Yes,
they respect the fact that this is your time that they're taking, and you know this is your job, and it means that they. Because I've had times when people have done things for me and haven't charged me. And there's a certain amount of things I need to do. Like, I need to ask someone to do this, or I need to ask someone to do that. And you feel a bit like, oh, they're doing it for me for free. Mm. But I need this thing to happen for it to be successful. And, you know, you're not sure, like, I'm never sure, like, whether the person I'm asking is like, oh, like that, because they might not be. But sometimes I feel like it makes it easier for me if I'm just like, right, I've paid them the money. Now I can ask you to do this sort of thing. Yeah. I don't need to feel guilty about it. So sometimes, I guess sometimes from a customer's point of view, it can be easier. And like you said, it's interesting that if you maybe give somebody a couple of hours free training and then the charging kicks in, then at least they know that, you know, their demand, you know, they're engaging you on a professional level, so to speak. But on that, you mentioned about helping customers to educate themselves.
Yeah,
I kind of think of let me Google that for you.
Yes,
which is a bit. We'll put that in the show notes. But it could sometimes be as simple as that, just showing somebody. Look, just because I've done that with a few people who have had problems. Just like say something with Microsoft Word, and they've asked me like, "How do you do this in Microsoft Word?" I'm not particularly, you know, I know it reasonably well.
Mm.
And I just said, well, just Google how to do that. Or what else have I been? There's been a couple of other things. Oh, yeah, when something just doesn't work on your operating system, or in iOS on your iPad where you can't do something.
Yeah.
You just say to
someone, Googling an error message works.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes people just don't understand that. And I think if, you know, once they see that there are, you know, lots of people who have had this particular problem, and somebody's got a really nicely worded, easy fix.
Mm.
Then maybe just showing a customer or a client that they can do that.
Yeah.
You know, teach a person to fish.
That's why sometimes when I'm asked a question, I will forward an article from the person that either built the system or someone else, saying there's no point me repeating what there's no point me trying to explain what this person can explain much better than I can, and just point to a link. And again, I don't know whether it's worked, but I hope that that's then shown them, oh, there's a big fat forum of answers here based on this very subject and I don't need to ask Ben again. Yeah, that's that works. You've just got to be polite about it and not sort of cocky.
Yeah. Is that what BFF stands for? Big Fat Forum?
No.
I'm inviting my Big Fat Forum over. We're going to watch The Notebook and eat ice cream. So the takeaway for this is to, again, no, it's a bit of a cheesy word, to have a bit of empathy, because of all situations that we've been in where we kind of want to know how to do something, but you've been a bit too shy or afraid to ask, or somebody's overshared, somebody's told you much, much more than you actually want to know, and it's kind of almost obscures the information that you need. Yeah. So I guess it's just the case of trying to gauge what the customer wants.
Yeah, I think it's okay we're trying not to be patronizing, but it is okay to say to someone, how much understanding do you have of this generally, or this area? And hopefully they will say, well, I understand this, isn't this? And you think, oh, you know where you are. But I'd rather ask the question than spend half an hour explaining something and they think they've been polite and listened, but they did know that already.
Yeah.
Or for that whole half an hour, you lost them at sentence two, and for the whole half an hour, they've not kept up with you. So I think the onus is probably on us to gauge what they do and don't know.
Yeah.
Ask them what they do and don't know.
Yeah. And I think just saying to somebody, have you used this before? Have you used WordPress before? Have you used a CMS before? Mm. Do you know what a CMS is? It's a simple thing. You know, you can ask somebody simple things. And looking at the reaction that you get. We had some friends over, and this friend asked, how you build a website? And I showed him, and he just started yawning his face off immediately. And I thought, maybe I need to sort of, again, you know, just gauge how interested this person is in this process. Maybe they don't really want to know. So
you didn't want to actually see your new coding one. No. You were just asking generally, how do you build a website?
So, lad, right, this is version control. Let me explain how it works. Here's a repository over here.
But, okay, so that's our topic. So let's do a read.
Okay.
So our read of the week is me. I was going to get Ben to introduce it, but I'll just monologue and go straight for it. It's from Smashing Magazine, written by somebody whose name I will not attempt to pronounce.
Okay.
But it's about how to successfully educate your clients on web development. And it's from 2010, but the principles all still apply. And again, it's talking about things like using Google, guiding somebody sort of through the site. And also one of the things that we kind of partially covered is about being in a position of authority. So you know, you are the expert. You've been hired to produce the site, so you can speak confidently. Mm. But then again, you know, you need to show a little bit of humility. But again, it's just an interesting, quite a short article. And so we'll pop that in as we do the week.
Good. Okay, so we've got our, what's it called? This has been, we haven't done this for a month. What's it called?
Jukebox.
Jukebox with a J.
With a J but not a D, because jukebox is different. That's kidnapping if you put a member of the aristocracy in a box.
I must apologise. I didn't really listen to your Tool Star. I was looking at the time and the weather, and I was thinking I should get that washing out. It's in the washing machine. So domesticated.
It's good that you use your daydreaming time to think of such lofty things.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Anyway, was it a good Tool Star?
It was the best Tool Star ever.
Ah, good.
It's going to turn the industry on its head.
But
listen to the podcast.
Okay, I will.
So this is our jukebox where we add a couple of tracks to the Relative Paths playlist.
Yeah.
What have you got, Ben?
I was inspired by the one that you picked last time, which I can't actually remember what it's called, but I know it was really short. A minute or something.
Yeah.
And I've got a little playlist on Spotify called Interludes and Shorties, and quite a lot of electronic music. Those sorts of albums quite often. Well, not just those, but they'll have little snippets. You know, they'll go in like a 30-second track or some kind of interlude. And Aphex Twin, who I'm sure has probably appeared already on the jukebox. There's a very short track that it's on an album which is a Selected Ambient Works, which I'm sure is something like 89 to 92 or something. So it's really early stuff, and it's just called I. And it's a tiny short, 1:17, I think, really short, lovely little piece of music. And for me, it just reminds me of a particular day, place, a particular group of friends, seeing them off at Victoria Station in London when I'd moved up there, and they were all travelling back to Bristol on the coach. And I love it. And it's really nice, and that's why I picked it.
Okay, we'll have a little clip. Mine is, it's not a track that I have quite as much of a history with. It's Midnight Feast by Mr. Scruff, who I've often come across. Mr. Scruff is the kind of artist, you'll often hear his tracks being used as like background music for like BBC documentaries or for people's like crazy YouTube videos or things like that. I first heard Mr. Scruff track on Spaced, on the TV series Spaced. So it's that kind of thing. But anyway, it's Midnight Feast. It's a bit more laid back compared to a lot of the stuff that he does, because a lot of his stuff is very up. And this is much more relaxing. It's a very sort of hip-hoppy kind of a track, the kind of thing I used to listen to sort of years ago. So it almost made me kind of nostalgic. I think the album itself is from 1999, but I wasn't listening to Mr. Scruff back then. But it's just really nice, relaxing kind of thing you should like. I don't know if you've got like, I was going to go on some whole kind of
odyssey
about kind of, you know, having a open top big American car driving along the strip, but let's just have a listen to the track, shall
okay
we?
Yes.
I went up a little cul-de-sac there.
Yeah, you did.
And got a bit lost and tried to back out sort of gracefully, and I don't know, maybe I succeeded. But
I do have one Mr. Scruff album, and it was called Trouser Jazz, which I think is a brilliant album name.
Yeah. Sometimes you can just, you know, you just, the amount of CDs that I had back in the days when you would sort of buy a CD blind, the amount of CDs that I had just because I like the title.
Yes.
And it's just a real, like, you don't know. Like, sometimes it'll be terrible and sometimes it'll be okay. But anyway, so that's our show. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback, we would be interested to hear from you. We will put this episode up on the website. Apologies, our previous episode isn't on there just for us kind of being in a bit of a whirlwind. Because I have been doing some very important work for the government, fighting crime, you know, all that sort of thing, taking care of her animals, important stuff, which I could set that aside to put an episode up on the website, but I'll do that this afternoon.
You hear that cockerel in the background?
I can. That cockerel is your friend. You love that cockerel.
That cockerel needs to die. Actually, I've just suddenly realized with these different microphones, people probably can't hear it now. We're gonna have to get used to this. I'm worrying about background noises in a way that probably don't matter anymore.
Okay.
Blah, 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 blah. Yes, anyway, back to you, Mark.
This is kind of part of, we are making an effort to kind of to up the quality. So we do have some new equipment, and we are endeavouring to be a bit better organised so we can record a bit more regularly. We've hopefully got some interesting guests coming up as well. Stories of our death have been
greatly. That's the wrong quote, isn't it?
It is.
Everyone gets the quote wrong.
What is the actual quote?
Yes, it's Mark Twain. I just Googled it and I found a nice picture of him smoking a cigar in a white suit holding a kitten sat on a rock.
But the kitten sat on a rock, or he is?
He is sat on a rock. The kitten is sat on his knee. The misquotation is, reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated, which kind of flows well and we can all use it. But actually, what he said was, the report of my death was an exaggeration.
Okay.
So it's very similar.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got the basic sort of meaning there. So that's okay. Feel free to misquote that, you know, at your leisure. If anybody reprimands you for doing that, tell them that relative paths give you permission to slightly misquote a quote. Yeah. There we go. So thanks for listening. What do we normally do here? Oh, yeah. Twitter.
Yep.
Relative Paths on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Come to the website, relativepaths.uk, where the show will be there, along with the show notes and a comment thread if you want to talk to us about it. Please leave us a review on your pod service of choice, whether that be iTunes or Stitcher. It's really helpful for us because it is how other people get to hear about us. The more reviews we get, the more highly we feature in iTunes and other things, the more likely that people will get to hear about us. So that would be helpful and much appreciated.
And our playlist is on both Spotify and, at the moment, because I'm doing a trial, it is on Apple Music as well.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure whether... I don't think I want to pay for both every month. But anyway, for the moment, it's available on both services and should be searchable under Relative Paths.
Get it while it's hot. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in your ears, hopefully, in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, bye-bye.